And we will continue with UFOs and covert programs. Up next, one of our special guests, Norio Hayakawa. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Norio Hayakawa calls himself a very unorthodox ufologist activist. He has spent almost 10 years investigating Area 51. He says that there is so much more to Area 51 than the facts made public about this well-known base. Now, back in 1990, he began to investigate strange goings-on in New Mexico as well. Here he is back on Coast to Coast. Norio, how are you?
Very good. Thank you so much, George, for having me again on your wonderful program.
I'm looking forward to this. What have you been doing since the last time I talked to you, which was, gosh, almost 2 years ago?
That's right. I've been continuing with my investigations on fascinating locations in New Mexico, where I now reside, and namely in northern New Mexico. Everybody has heard of this very unique, strange location, if you will, called Dulce, New Mexico, means sweet in Spanish. Originally, that town was called Agua Dulce, which meant sweet water, but the United States government created an Indian reservation in the early 1900s, and the Jicarilla Apache people just named their town, the main town, Dulce for short.
What is so significant about that area, Norio?
Well, that location to me is one of the most amazing, fascinating locations because of the consistent reports of what they describe as almost paranormal type activity, but mainly reported the sightings of strange lights and objects even during the daytime, as well as occasional sightings of military helicopters, where there are no bases of any kind near there, but people continue to report these things, plus reports of Bigfoot sightings and reports of other very mysterious incidents. But those are just what I describe as superficial incidences or reports. There are deeper issues in that area, I'm convinced.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Now, you also organized an underground base conference several years ago. Tell me how that went.
Well, it went amazingly well. It was attended by at least 130 to 140 people, including many local residents of Dulce, New Mexico, who never have ever had any conference of this kind, an underground base conference right in the middle of Dulce, New Mexico. Nobody has done that before. So this was a historic gathering. It was more or less like a public forum because we invited the local people, and surprisingly, former law enforcement officials of that area also came, and some of them even spoke briefly at the conference, indicating that there's definitely something there. What that something is, I still haven't come to any conclusions.
Have the people who live in that region come to any conclusions?
Well, actually, there are lots of residents of Dulce, New Mexico, who claim that there is an underground base under the Archuleta Mesa, which is located right next to Dulce. The bulk of the Archuleta Mesa is on the Colorado side, but the Archuleta Mesa's extreme southern side belongs to the Jicarilla Apache Nation.
Now, this base would be controlled by military or by someone else?
Well, it's just an allegation, but the allegation is that there is a joint U.S. and so-called alien entities operating this base. But this is simply an allegation, and there's absolutely no physical evidence of any kind so far that I can tell to prove that there is such a physical facility there. But the fact of the matter is that there are many circumstantial evidences that seem to point out that something is there. And I have to really be honest with you. I don't want to say what it is because I don't know. And I still frequent that location because it's only about 3 hours' drive from my home right here in Rio Rancho, New Mexico.
Are you convinced, Norio, that something is going on in that region?
I am convinced that the reports and accounts are credible, but that does not mean that it is exactly what they describe to be, because there could be so many things about that area. First of all, you know, I believe that the government has had some connections in that area insofar as experimentations in disposal of nuclear waste or toxic chemicals or dumping of waste materials from black budgets. That was initially my speculation, and this all resulted from a very strange project that took place only about 22 miles southwest of Dulce, New Mexico, on December 10th of 1967. And most Americans have never heard of this unusual experiment that took place.
What did they do?
Well, actually, the Atomic Energy Commission, which is right now the Department of Energy, of course, but in 1967, the Atomic Energy Commission exploded a nuclear device underground about 22 miles southwest of Dulce, New Mexico, right inside the Carson National Forest, which is right next to the Hickory Apache Reservation. And that explosion, or this testing, took place on December 10th, about a mile and a half underground, that whole area. And, of course, before that explosion took place, this nuclear test underground, the government reportedly went to the nearby communities to alert the people that on December 10th, they will be feeling some earthquakes, but don't worry that this is part of a governmental project to help the local area, because by this project, which was known as Project Gas Buggy, the government allegedly claimed that by creating this explosion a mile and a half underground, they could ease the flow of natural gas that were entrapped under hard rocks in that entire region.
And make a fortune for somebody.
Well, that's possibly. But that was the explanation. And, it sounded fine and dandy, but what happened was, George, that the after effects of that strange experiment, in my opinion, started appearing around 1975. The explosion took place in 1967, but there's no doubt that some type of radiation started leaking slowly but surely and causing some kind of a physical problems, or, you know, to animals and even humans in that area. In fact, the government realized that radiation started leaking out in that area slowly and may have affected animals like cattle, you know, cows, and then eventually humans. In fact, this is probably one of the main reasons that the Dulce area has a high rate of cancer and a very high rate of infertility among you know, young women there. And so this situation is very serious situation, and it continues to be a serious situation. I know a lot of people there who have cancer, And definitely, I'm interested in this subject because, well, it involves our hard-earned tax dollars. And I'm interested in all this type of things because anything that involves our hard-earned tax dollars that is damaging to our environment or, you know, to
people, us, yeah.
I am definitely concerned.
There was a late police officer, New Mexico State Police officer, who was in charge of Dulce. Did you have an opportunity to talk with him? Was he at your conference?
Yes, he was. In fact, after I moved from Los Angeles to New Mexico in 2008, I became good friends with the late Gabe Valdez, and he was assigned by the state of New Mexico to investigate the strange cattle mutilations that apparently started in that area around 1975.
Yeah.
And so he resided in Dulce, and he was in charge of all kinds of, you know, like crimes. And cattle mutilation certainly is a crime because in the 70s and up to the early 80s, a lot of ranchers lost a lot of money. One family lost about 17 cows to these mutilations, losing about $100,000 in today's currency.
And that was their livelihood, wasn't it?
That's right. In fact, so this was the reason why Gabe Valdez was assigned, and he was in charge of that Dulce area, you know, trying to solve not only that, but all other crimes as well. So he knows the Dulce area very, very well, and he told me in 2008 that he believed that there is a physical facility in Dulce, or not necessarily Archuleta Mesa, but in the Archuleta Mountain, which is northwestern portion of that mesa. He believed that there is a governmental facility. And he told me that he doesn't believe, he never believed that there were any aliens there, but it was definitely a government. In fact, another prominent figure, a friend of mine, Edmund Gomez, who was one of the sons of the Gomez ranch, a famous ranch in Dulce, he told me that he also believes that there is a physical base there, but it has nothing to do with aliens. And, you know, both of these gentlemen are very, very highly respected. And but unfortunately, Gabe Valdez passed away suddenly last year because of, I'm not sure why he passed away. He was in good health.
How old was he?
He was 68, and he was in very good health, but he continued with his personal investigations into the allegation that there's a physical base there in Dulce, and even after he retired, he, on his own, continued his personal investigations, and he told me that there are many interesting locations in Dulce that causes suspicion that there could be some kind of an entrance to some kind of a, you know, facility, but he didn't like to really go into details. And but one thing he told me, George, that was very interesting, and that which kind of agreed with my interpretation of things happening over there, is that the possibility that the government may have staged some kind of a fake alien UFO scenario in that area, as a like
a diversion,
manipulation, or diversion of beliefs in that area to hide other covert programs, possibly like maybe bio warfare research.
What if it was an area to test to see what reaction there would be on people before they take it nationwide?
Yeah, that's right. In other words, I'm saying that he even told me that things like possible staging of UFO-like situation through possibly using holograms or airborne holographic projectors, which I believe that it's possible that Sandia Corporation back in 1979 and 1980 may have been testing prototypes of remotely controlled platforms, which is known today as drones or UAVs, and also creating some kind of props on that mesa to give the illusion that there was some kind of alien activity as a diversion to cover something else that's more realistic.
Isn't that interesting that they'd have to create an ET presence in order to hide some kind of military technology?
Yes, that's. I'm not saying that is exactly what happened, but I believe that there is that possibility because that area, to begin with, is filled with people's beliefs in spiritual or religious traditional deep beliefs involving beliefs such as, you know, what's possibly can be described as paranormal.
Well, let me, Norio, let me ask you about these cattle mutilations from the 70s. No question they happened. I mean, these cattle were scattered all over that area. But what are your thoughts on who or what did it and why?
Well, actually, I am convinced that it has nothing to do with aliens.
Okay.
It has everything to do, if at all, with the government, because many ranchers discovered that their cows were pre-marked with phosphorescent markings before they were found mutilated. And even government-issued fountain pens were found, plus gas masks of some kind were found in that area. And, you know, aliens don't need gas masks. So, you know, I'm just giving you this kind of a alternative scenario. It still is a mystery. I have to admit that. We don't have the full answer to the cattle mutilations, but
I mean, why if it was government, why mutilate the cattle? I mean,
well,
they could raise the cattle themselves.
That's what a lot of people say, but again, by creating this type of incident, definitely can create some kind of a belief system among the observers or the people.
If it was done by man, to me, that's the only explanation. As a diversion, as a ruse to trick people.
That is very possible, and this is the reason why I believe that we need to, you know, go into this type of situations where we can actually go to the place and, you know, do the further investigations. And, you know, this is the type of thing I've always been interested, whether in Area 51 in Nevada or Dulce, New Mexico's alleged base, my main interest is in our hard-earned tax dollars. For example, in 1998, George, I organized the first people's rally at Area 51 by the perimeter line on Groom Lake Road, and it was attended by about 250 people, and our main purpose was to make the government admit the existence of the base, plus compensate the workers and former workers and their families for illnesses that they contacted while working
there
at that base. Huh. You know, toxic chemicals that were used in the stealth coding programs over there at the base. And initially, nothing was done. But I believe in people's, you know, persistent activism, grassroots activism, and because of this, the Department of Energy finally admitted and started to compensate some workers.
I want to talk more with you, Nori Ago, of what is going on here. Norio Hayakawa, our special guest, website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. You know, we take your editorials, we call it sound off, and if you want to sound off, simply send your editorial with your phone number to editorial at coasttocoastam.com, just like this.
This is Mark from Florida, and this is my sound off. In the mid-60s, I'd watch Chet Huntley and David Brinkley with my dad. I had an older brother in Vietnam. We kept ourselves up to date on the war. My dad was a working man and had little time for television, and we relied and trusted on this nightly broadcast. And today, the working person has even less time or political savvy to keep up to date on world events. Most still trust the evening news and or newspaper to give an unbiased and even-handed account of world events. Those of us with a critical ear are aware that blatant bias motivates the media's attempt to manipulate the masses and influence the outcome of elections and sway public opinion. To be honest, frank, and fair, it truly is a form of exploitation. This is Mark from Florida, and this has been my sound off.
And welcome back, Norio Hayakawa with us. Norio, 1947, Roswell. Very interesting, significant date, wasn't it?
Oh, sure, yes. You know, the Roswell incident really opened up a lot of things. That took place in 1947 outside of Roswell. But again, when you get to the bottom of everything, we have no 100% evidence for any kind of, alien presence there. But the significance about the 1947 incident is because it's related to the year when the Air Force was established. In 1947, the CIA was suddenly established, which was a successor to the OSS. And then in 1947, National Security Agency, NSA, was established. In 1947, one of the premier contractors at Area 51 in Nevada, EG&G Corporation, started in 1947, as well as Sandia Laboratories in Albuquerque, probably one of the most advanced conglomerate defense research groups. Sandia Laboratories started in 1947. Edwards Air Force Base, one of the most important air bases in the United States, started in 1947. This is, I don't think it's, maybe it's just a coincidence, but what you have to, take into consideration when we're talking about New Mexico's Roswell in 1947 is that, did you know that in 1945, right after the conclusion of World War II, the United States brought in hundreds and hundreds of German scientists, engineers, and even SS intelligence officers to Albuquerque, New Mexico, in this program called Operation Paperclip.
That's right.
They were transferred from Ohio's Wright-Patterson Wright Airfield, in 1945, and then they were transferred to Albuquerque's Kirtland Army Air Base.
They took the German brain power, didn't they?
Exactly. And many of them then were sent to Los Alamos National Laboratories, 100 miles north of Albuquerque, and many others were sent to White Sands missile ranges, 100 miles south, humongous area.
If we didn't have that ability to take the German brain power at the time, after the war, how far or how long would it have taken us to finally get to the point where we were able to go to the moon in 1960?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, without their Operation Paperclip, I can't imagine, the state of technology that we have, like NASA and so on. But the important thing, as I mentioned, is that the German scientists and engineers played a major role in the initial setup of America's black programs. But what's interesting, George, is that besides rocketry that the Germans excelled in, and you know the Germans, of course, worked along with the U.S. military to test all kinds of rocketry in White Sands, 1945, 1946, and so on. But besides rocketry, it is believed that the Germans may have, the United States, I'm saying, may have acquired some kind of unorthodox items, such as the prototypes of flying wing aircraft that the Germans had tested in Germany in 1943, one of which was known as Horten 229, that was test flown in Germany in 1943, and it's my belief that the United States got hold of Horten 229, which apparently had some kind of a ramjet engine attached and could fly at least 500 to 600 miles per hour. And there is an interesting testimony by one of the former EGNG employee by the name of Alfred O'Donnell, who claimed that he had joined EGNG from the very onset, that is in 1947. And according to his account, which was told to Los Angeles Times investigative journalist Annie Jacobson, Alfred O'Donnell indicated to Jacobson that the Russians acquired that Horten 229 and intentionally crashed that flying wing into America's, southwest, namely White Sands, in the east of White Sands, which is Roswell area, in 1947.
That's possible, I guess, isn't it?
Well, it's very possible, but I believe this could be, who is to say that this is not this information, because I believe that it was not the Russians or the Soviet Union, but the United States that acquired Horten 229. So, again, we just don't know what really took place, but this is another consideration that about the Roswell incident. Anything is possible. I'm not denying anything, because even through my more than 50 years of research into the UFO phenomenon, I cannot still come to any dogmatic conclusion about what this phenomenon is, because that's why I still pursue this.
And you seem, Norio, you seem to be hedging toward some kind of man-made episode rather than extraterrestrial.
Yes, I am actually a healthy skeptic. I take a healthy skeptical position when it comes to UFOs, aliens, and conspiracies, but I'm still open. But I just don't immediately latch on to something that I cannot fully, prove. And for a long time, I was a tremendous believer in some of the famous photographs taken by, for example, in 1957, the Brazilian Navy took a fascinating photo of what appeared to be a flying saucer-shaped object off of Brazil's Trinidad Island in 1957. But it was a tremendous disappointment 2 years ago to find out that the person that took the photo for the Brazilian Navy admitted that it was a hoax. And I'm also saying that, for a long time, I trusted the 1990 Belgium triangular photo that was allegedly taken, during that flap that they had in Belgium in 1990. And this photo of this black triangular object with three reddish round lights on each end of the triangle, the person that took that photo admitted that it was a hoax. So it was a total disappointment, and this is the reason why, George, I cannot trust any photos or even videos, because you know, if you look at the state of art in computer graphics imagery, it's amazing.
Oh, so, of course, what they can do now. I mean, look at the movies today compared to the movies from way gone back in terms of the graphics and animation. I you know, I remember some of the television shows, you know, of, what was it, Buck Rogers and things like that. You could see the string on the rocket ship as they floated it in to the camera. You know, now everything's animation. They look real.
Absolutely. You can't even tell, you know. It's hard to tell if it's real or not, because it looks so real. And, you know, this is the world we're living in right now, George, that we have this tremendous medium called the Internet, and there's plenty of good information on the Internet on everything, but at the same time, there's a lot of misinformation proliferating over the Internet, and thirdly, there's a lot of disinformation, which is an intended, you know, misinformation, either by those who have that kind of a desire to throw these things out on the Internet to muddy the waters of things. So, yes, there are a lot of good information on the Internet, and I actually post a lot of my thoughts or my writings on the Internet, especially on YouTube, because, you know, people these days, they like to listen, but they also like to see things, you know, visualization of things, so like pictures or whatever. But, you know, so I post a lot of my thoughts on YouTube, which is a very great medium. But overall, George, my conclusion is that I take a very healthy skeptical position on the subject. But this is not to say that the UFO phenomenon is not real. In fact, I believe, just like Dr. Jacques Vallée and, you know, people like John A. Keel,
sure,
that the UFO phenomenon definitely seems to be real. But, you know, to come to the conclusion that it is a representation of physical alien visitation is just a little stretch.
But you don't put people down, at least, who believe that.
That's right, because anything is possible, because we have so many, you know, mysterious things in our life. In fact, our whole life and death is a mystery, and there could be other realities that may be coexisting with our reality, and we don't really even know what reality is. And, you know, I'm interested in this kind of thing because for many, many years, George, I don't want to talk about this too much, but I was a licensed funeral director for many, many years, at least.
Oh, I bet you have stories.
In Los Angeles.
Ever see a body wake up?
You know, I used to go to the morgue many times at midnight or, you know.
Why?
2 or 3 in the morning to... Well, you know, listen to music or even watch TV, because I used to live in a mortuary, because I didn't have a place to stay, so they let me stay in there by myself, completely by myself, and, you know, upstairs. But when I go to downstairs, you know, there are, there used to be like 25 to 26 people sleeping there, you know. And initially, it felt a little strange, but I got so used to it, and to a point where I could just watch a horror movie in the morgue and still not, you know, feel nothing.
I would be out of there.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, because of this, the kind of work I was doing, I learned about life and death and philosophies and what people think about life, death, and I came to the conclusion that life and death is really actually it's a continuation, and so I came to a point where I'm not afraid to die, I'm not afraid of death, and that there's more to this life than just the physical reality, and this is the reason why when I study ufology, I believe that anything is possible because, you know, when my mother, you know, told me that she had witnessed a flying saucer in 1975 during broad daylight over railway station, I was so astonished because she used
And you believed her, right?
That's right. She used to be a staunch skeptic and used to make fun of me when I was growing up because I was believing in flying saucers. But 1975, I was just so astounded because she said she saw a flying saucer that instantaneously appeared over that train station during broad daylight and simply vanished in a couple of seconds. And then she described that thing as a typical flying saucer with a dome attached to it, just like the ones you see in comic books or in science fiction movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, do I believe her? Definitely. No question about it.
But the question is, what did she see?
That is the big question. And this is why when people say they had, seen things, I'm sure that they had seen things. There are tens of thousands of, you know, firsthand personal accounts, as you know, of people who claim to have witnessed what they could only describe as UFOs. And this definitely includes highly qualified individuals. So definitely I cannot, debunk that kind of experience, personal experiences, because who have I to say that it didn't happen? But the thing is that it's a separate question when it comes to really finding out what they saw, you know, what was it, you know. So I keep pursuing this matter because there is no subject more important in this world, George, than the pursuit of this unknown.
Well, that is true. Back to Area 51 for just a second, Norio.
Yes.
Are they still using it as extensively as they did?
Well, actually, it has, it's going on just as before. There are new buildings over there. They just established or created a new humongous hangar-looking structure towards the south ramp. There's a lot of activities. You can tell by the number of employees' vehicles parked in Las Vegas McCarran Airport, part of that airport. So there's no question. However, you know, I believe that lots of programs that are conducted in Area 51 now are basically, automatically controlled. For example, remotely controlled platforms, new generations of stealth and so on, radar and so on. So there's no question that activities are ongoing, but may perhaps not in a larger scale as before, even though they have more new buildings and they just paved, the road that goes from the Groom Lake to the Groom Lake Road. They completely paved it, there are a lot of interesting structures, but the interesting thing about the Area 51 facility is that because the state of Nevada established the neighbor of Area 51, which is the Nevada test site, which became the Nevada National Security Site, or N2S2, which basically is a testing ground for different kinds of weapon systems. Many of these things were started because of the anti-terrorist programs.
Now, what about Area 52?
Well, actually, Area 52 is simply a nomenclature for the Tonopah test range.
I see. All right, yeah. Hold on, Norio. We're going to come right back. Final hour to come with you. We're going to take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.